If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
All right. Feel like podcasting? That's with an I-N, not with an I-N-G. All right, well then, if you feel like it, I do. And so that's two for two. So let's say we make a plan. All right? Okay, Reggie, put it in the book here. Episode 479. 479-er. Woo-hoo! Getting close to that elusive 500. All right. Are you set? I am. Can it be more hotter out? Ugh. At least it's nice in here. Perfect temperature for a podcast. What do you say? Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, listening is always top priority. But a close second priority is getting out there and spreading the word about this podcast. So tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you've been listening to for years or months or maybe even a week, whatever the case may be, whenever you've discovered this podcast, maybe it's right now. You can always find more. You can find out what we've been talking about for the last 9 years. So go to WGNRadio.com, go to the prompt for podcasts, and then go for the specific prompt for this podcast. And there you will find a great and impressive and collection of podcasts from the past. Just load more. Scroll down. Load more. But right now, you can listen to episode 479. 479. Well, just when I, you know, every week, you know, it's not easy. I know you say, oh, Jim, you know, sitting around doing a podcast, talking, what's so hard about that? I'm not saying it's climbing Mount Everest. I'm not saying it's finding a cure for cancer, but it's not that easy as well. Certainly, if you have the gift of gab that I do, it's very natural. You know, the funny thing is that there's some topics here. If I really wanted to, I could have a 4-hour podcast by myself without any interruptions. I don't know how that well that would go over with you folks out there, but I'm just saying, if I had to, you know, when and don't think I haven't done that to some extent. I don't know if I've ever talked about this, but when I was on the college radio station in college at Elmhurst, now Elmhurst University here in the Chicagoland area, and for my last podcast. No, we didn't have a podcast. For my last radio show in college, I was on for, I think, I was hoping to go on for 20 hours, 24 hours. I didn't make it. I think I wound up going on for about 18 or 19, and then I just sort of said, okay. But I gave it a shot. There's no doubt about that. you know, there's no commercials on a, at least ours, on a college radio station. Now, certainly in playing songs and playing music. And I did that. So I wasn't talking continuously for 24 hours. or 19 or 18 or 20, whatever it was. But I certainly was talking for quite a bit. And with help from a lot of the people that used to listen to my show who called in and kept me alert, and some people that would continually come into the studio and keep me company during that time. And somebody brought me a, I don't know, like a 12-pack of Jolt Cola. I don't know if they still make Jolt Cola, but in the 80s, there was this thing called Jolt Cola, and it was basically just filled to the rim with sugar or with caffeine. I don't know how much else was in that. It didn't taste all that good. It probably was the precursor to the energy drink, now that I think about it at this minute. But it was certainly a keep you upper, if you will. I think I started my usual show started at 6 o'clock in the evening on a Sunday. I always thought that was a good time slot because people were home on Sunday. I mean, don't forget, this is a small college radio station. It had a very small radius around, but did have a nice regular listener base who would call in and talk on the phone and request songs and things like that. So it was a nice deal, and certainly gave me a lot of important practice and confidence to be able to do this. And certainly after that, I felt like it was something worth pursuing. I felt like that going in 4 years before, it was something that I think I would be good at. And after 4 years, I've walked out much more confident and I think much more skilled than I did when I walked in. And it was great to get feedback from people, regardless of how many. The fact that anybody listened was a compliment. And yeah, somebody gave me some Jolt Cola. They walked into the studio and said, here, you might need this. I think I started at 6 o'clock in the evening, as usual. And I think I went, yeah, I think it was almost like 20 hours. I think I went till about 1 or 2 in the afternoon. Yeah, I remember it was, I gave it a gallant shot, but it was not easy. But yeah, Jolt Cola, look that up on the internet. I don't know if they still make that. And I'm trying to figure out why the heck I started to talk about this. I told you I could talk forever if I had to, but I promise I won't. Wow, I can't even, a lot of times I always say how I come back, my little digressions here always have a reason. So I know there was a reason when I go back. When I listen back to the tape here, I'll remember. I said, oh, I should have thought of that. But, once again, this show is very scripted, right? But what I do want to talk about today, although it was nice to walk down memory lane and talk about my my days at WRSE, Elmhurst Radio Station, 88.7 FM. And, way down there on the left side of the dial. If you go any farther down the dial there, it falls off. Although now you don't even know what a dial is, right? Think about that. Remember the radio dial? Today, everything is digital. Everything is numbers. But those of you who are old enough to remember, the radio had a dial. It actually had the little red, that little red bar that you moved back and forth with a lever. Remember that? Or a little knob. They don't even have knobs anymore. I like knobs. No knobs, no dials. There used to be a phrase, 88.7 out of your dial. No, there's no more dials anymore. People are just punching numbers in. In my day, we had dials. We used to punch buttons or manually turn a knob to find our radio station. It took long. You had to go all the way down from one end to the other. It took a long time. You had to hear all this till you finally got to your station. It was inconvenient. It was inefficient. And we liked it. We loved it. So I don't know why I got on that little detour about my college radio years, but I think It was fun to go down memory lane. I hope you enjoyed that. But now we'll get off. We'll take the exit off memory lane, and we'll get back on the main highway of our main topic. What do you say? Okay, I'm putting my directional on. Remember that? Remember when people used directionals too when they drove? Do they teach that anymore? To use a turn signal or a lane change? We used to call it a directional. I don't even know if they call it that anymore. But you know, like, you know, you hit the button on the arm of your car, so you say, "I'm going right or going left, or I'm going to go in this lane." Do they teach that anymore? I don't see it. You have to be a mind reader out there now. In my day, and I guess this podcast, to some extent, my main topic today is going to be in my day. Maybe that's why I'm going down memory lane, because I'm going to be talking a little bit about memory lane. Not so much my memory lane, but memory lane in general. And back in the olden days, you know, like maybe 10 years ago. Yeah, these days, that's the olden days. It's sad to say that, but that's really what it boils down to. That's the olden days now. But yeah, big news this week. When Stephen Colbert was basically fired from his job. Now, not fired in a traditional sense. They didn't walk him out with his cardboard box out of the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York, out of CBS. No, they didn't do that, but they basically said, "This is your last season." And so that's sort of what they do nowadays. They don't necessarily fire anybody per se, unless there's some real, infraction that went on. For the most part, if they're going to, in the show business at least, Pat Sajak, I don't know if he retired or if he was moved out, but, you know, they gave him a year to sort of do his farewell tour. And they're sort of giving that to Stephen Colbert. There's no question that was quite a shock. But at the same time, it shouldn't have been. Now, if you've been listening to me with any regularity over the years, I've talked about several times different types of formerly foundational things of our culture, or even in the entertainment world, that at one time were very good ideas, were considered revolutionary, and changed the way that we acted and behaved and what we reacted to. They were game changers. They shifted our collective thought, and they moved our behavior and our culture and our society in a certain way. They were huge, huge foundational benchmarks that happened. And I've mentioned many of these over the years, especially in the last ones in the last 40 or 50 or 60 years. That's basically my lifetime, so I'd have a pretty good idea of at least something that I always grew up having a part of my life, and suddenly realizing, you know, this is not as relevant as it was anymore, even though you thought something like that would never be irrelevant. I've talked about, not only have we seen great technology changes, even in the last 40 or 50 or 60 years. I mean, you know, we talked about, eight-track tapes and cassettes and VHS and then DVDs. And now, you know, look at where we're at. We're talking about AI. We're talking about, think about the way the computer started. You know, this big old honking thing with this, giant server and all this and, all these, different cords. And now there's Wi-Fi and you've got your phone, and you've got your wireless technology, and your laptop computer, and everything. It's just really amazing. But I'm not even talking about technology. I mean, things like I've talked about, like Rolling Stone magazine, almost now 50 years. I believe it was probably 68, 67 or 68 when it first appeared in San Francisco. So I'm sure they'll be celebrating. So that'll be 60 years. What am I talking about? 1967. They'll be celebrating their 60th anniversary. I'm sure they will, if they're still around. Even though Rolling Stone is still around, I'm not sure about the relevance of Rolling Stone. And that's my point. When it debuted in San Francisco, put together by Jan Wenner and other people, but he was the main driving force, I think it was 67. Wow. What a revolutionary and radical idea. There were a lot of underground newspapers and magazines, if you will, at the time. But this one was, you know, caught the zeitgeist. This one was right there when, in the perfect storm, when there was a collision of culture going on. And it was this mix of rock music, of the counterculture, and overall the youth culture that was beginning to flex its muscles. And ever since then, that's all we've had. There never was a youth culture in this country. There was pretty much the established culture. It was very much an adult culture in this country, for the most part. Children were not really catered to until the 60s and the 70s, from advertising, from anything else. And I know, once again, that's crazy to think about or even grasp, especially in these days, because that's the only group that's really catered to now. We've come a full 180. But Rolling Stone was a great idea, and it thrived for several decades. But as time has gone on, as the world has changed around us, behaviors have changed. Certainly the technology and the platforms for, you know, communication and information have changed. It lost its relevance. There's way too many other voices out there. And right now, I think Rolling Stone exists because of its brand name. But I don't know anybody who talks about, did you see Rolling Stone? I don't even know if you can see Rolling Stone anymore. I may have told you this. I'm sure I did. About 35, almost 40 years, about 35 years ago, I think, I was offered a lifetime subscription, and for $30, which is crazy. Rolling Stone used to come out twice a month. I think the regular yearly subscription at that time was like $30. But it may have not been exactly 30. It may have been around then. It was a downturn in the economy, and advertising rates were going down. And whenever advertising rates go down, certainly any kind of media supported business, you know, or ad revenue supported business suffers. And most media companies are sponsored and ad revenue supported. And so I think that Rolling Stone was starting to bleed. And so they just wanted to keep their subscriber base. So when they went to advertisers, they could say, hey, we've got 2 million subscribers. They didn't want that advertising base, that subscriber base to fall down. That would hurt their leverage in the ad world. And so they offered a lifetime subscription for 30 years. For $30. And so in my view at that time, in the early 90s, I was like, yeah. I've been a subscriber for many years. That's probably why they offered it to me. But I was like, yeah, why not? And I think I may have mentioned this on the hard copy part of the magazine. There was always a sticker with your address on it, and they would always have the year that your subscription would expire. And I noticed that one time, and I'm like, I saw the year. And I added it up, and I'm like, huh. So they're expecting me to live to about 95. I'll take that. And my goal was always to live past that expiration year so I can call up Rolling Stone and say, where's my copy? You said lifetime. I'm still around.
In my day.
So I naively thought that Rolling Stone would be around all those years, 35 years ago. But in the last 20 or so, certainly the last 15, you could see that, I mean, Rolling Stone's gotten bought by someone else. Jan Wenner is no longer involved. It's a name brand. It was once a revolutionary idea, but the times have changed, and it's barely hanging on. I'm sure it'll hang around another couple of years to celebrate its 60th anniversary, but, you know, what do they say about if a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it? Playboy magazine, another perfect example. Oh, in the 50s, completely revolutionary. Made Hugh Hefner a cultural icon for 50 years, practically. Changed the culture in terms of sexual attitudes and permissiveness and liberal thinking. You name it. All over the place. Huge, huge nudity, right? You name it. Changed the culture. But does anybody talk about Playboy magazine anymore? Now Hugh Hefner is looked at as a misogynist and as a exploiter of women, but in his heyday, he was feted, he was celebrated, he was praised. Hef, the Playboy Mansion. Great ideas in their time. But as the years go on, they become obsolete, and the key is to recognize that. But we don't like to admit any kind of obsolescence. MTV. I've talked about that a few weeks ago with Live Aid. Huge, huge cultural game changer in the 80s. Now, don't even know if it exists. They call it the MTV Video Music Awards. I don't know why. I think they're going to be on network television now or some. So how could they be called? I think they're just called the Video Music Awards now. The MTV logo is there. But they're not even saying MTV. MTV is a thing of the past. If I was talking about Live Aid and MTV played such a pivotal role in the broadcasting of that event in 1985, but I wonder if there were younger people that don't even know what I was talking about. Yeah, MTV is still available. It still exists. I think it's full of, like so many cable stations, it's full of reality shows. But it's not what it once was. Music television, 24 hours a day. Of showing music videos. It's not that anymore. It hasn't been that for 20 years. And hasn't had the cultural impact for even more than that. But my gosh, you know, 45 years ago, 44 years ago, I think it debuted in 81. Certainly 40 years ago, you would think that MTV would be a constant cultural force for 100 years. You would think it was irreplaceable. Barely registers. I've talked about this genre that I want to talk about today being another one that has, I think, run its course. It's around only because, as I said before, we're very leery of putting things into obsolescence. We look at the history of it and say, oh, well, you know, but there are times when ideas that were once hallmarks, they just fall out of fashion. And a lot of times it may be difficult to part with them, but it's even more difficult to see them hanging around on a last leg. And when the news that Stephen Colbert and The Late Show, not just him as a host, but the franchise itself, that CBS, the Tiffany Network, if you will, that was always the nickname for CBS, the Tiffany Network, meaning that it was very classy and exclusive and amongst the other networks. The Tiffany Network, it had class, it had style, it just didn't throw anything on television. That's where that Tiffany Network, moniker comes from, because of the Tiffany lamps and the beauty and the elegance and the artistry of a Tiffany lamp. I don't know if CBS is necessarily the Tiffany Network anymore, but that's what it used to be called, at least internally. But when they canceled not only talking about Stephen Colbert, but the whole franchise, we are getting out of late night television. It was a shockwave, but from my standpoint, the late night talk show has been Rolling Stone and Playboy and MTV for at least the last 10 years, if not even longer. It no longer is this benchmark of television. The late night talk show, there's no question, it was a foundational part of television. The Tonight Show is one of the longest running shows on television, dating back to Steve Allen, who was the first host, and then Jack Parr, and then Johnny Carson, and then Jay Leno, then Conan O'Brien, and then Jay Leno, and now Jimmy Fallon. There's a great history, there's a great nostalgia to that show and to the genre that it helped establish, and to the cultural behavior that we would, at the end of the day, we would go to get some light entertainment before we went to bed. That was basically the idea of the late night talk show, the Tonight Show. Depending on where you are in the country, in the East Coast, it was a little later, so it's the Tonight Show. It was the last thing many people saw before they fell asleep. It basically was kind of this thing to be able to even fall asleep to. During your rough day, you'd come home, you'd unwind, you'd eat, you'd watch a little TV, and you'd have a little laugh and a little recap of the day. What happened in the news in a satirical, funny way? Have some entertainers on to sing a song, tell a joke, tell a few stories, and you fell asleep until the next day. It was a much simpler world, believe me. Now, as I said, there's no such thing as that. There's way too many options. There's way too much individuality. But when you only had two or three networks at the time, they really drove behavior. They drove the culture, especially television. First radio, well, I would say movies, then radio, but then television. Wow. Visual in your home. Don't forget, movies, visual, amazing, bigger than life. But in the olden days, before we had 95-inch screens in our homes, you had to go to a place to get it. Radio, certainly impactful. Communication, talking, news, information, entertainment in your home, great, but not visual. Movies, great, big, visual, transformational, escapism. But you had to leave, you had to go to a place. Television combined the best of them. The communication, the audio, the visual, and it was in your home. Didn't have to go anywhere. It was the perfect invention. And so the late night genre was there. Now the other networks over the years have tried and have been in the late night world. But because the Tonight Show got there first and established itself, and then with hosts like especially Jack Parr, but certainly Johnny Carson, in the early to mid 60s, when really the culture really began, I would say pop culture really began to take hold. You know, television, for the most part, was introduced in the late 40s, but it took a while for television. It was still relatively expensive, the economy and things like that. But really, television took a real stranglehold of our culture and shook it and influenced it in the late 50s and then in the early 60s. And Johnny Carson, once again, timing is everything. He wasn't a well-known guy, but he, at the time, he was known to some extent, but he got the main seat. And he kept that seat for 30 years. And that show was so dominant. He was the richest paid entertainer in the world. And that was appointment television. People watched The Tonight Show. There, other networks tried to go after Johnny Carson throughout the years with some big name people going back years. Joey Bishop and Jerry Lewis and other people, they tried, but Johnny just had it was his, he redefined it and he owned it. And in the process, late night talk shows, especially The Tonight Show, became a benchmark, a hallmark, a foundation to what television viewing was. And I say was. We know overall that television viewing is down, especially with the networks. People are watching their phones, watching TV, but they're watching it on a variety of platforms. We know this already. You don't have to go over this. You know, it's streaming and cable and networks. It's all over the place. Podcasts, everything. There's way too many choices. And so television overall, especially network television, is probably at the bottom of the list now. And so it was once a powerhouse. The Tonight Show was basically responsible for the success of NBC. This one show that it started out at 90 minutes and went to an hour over time was the main driver, the main generator of hundreds of millions of dollars for NBC over the years. And they paid Johnny Carson accordingly. But in 2025, that is just not the case anymore. But here we have this television mainstay that has been a part of our culture. It's been a part of television for more than probably 70 years, if you go back to when the original Tonight Show with Steve Allen premiered. I'm not sure exactly what year it premiered, but it's close to 70 years, if not more. And so when something has been around that long, we just assume, like I assume, that Rolling Stone magazine would be around for me to call them up when I'm 95 years old and say, where's my issue? Or to think that Playboy magazine would continue to be around and be this cultural, benchmark. I think Hugh Hefner's kids are trying to buy it back because it was sold and do something with it. But Playboy will never have the impact that it had when Hugh Hefner first introduced it in the 50s. It was a great revolutionary idea for its time. But even the greatest ideas, even the greatest inventions sometimes go out of style, go out of fashion. They get replaced by the culture or by something new, a new invention. And basically, the social media has taken over and replaced late night television. But it was as I said before, it was a very lucrative television segment. And even though, and once Johnny Carson left, he had such a stranglehold on that when he left, the other networks began to say, now that Johnny's gone, he was invincible. But after that, well, nobody's invincible now. Yeah, oh yeah, there's, Jay Leno had a very popular run for like 20 years, two different, he was like Donald Trump, he had two different tenures. I just thought about that. Now, think about that. Jay Leno had two different tenures at the Tonight Show. Conan O'Brien was like Joe Biden in the middle there between the two Jay Leno tenures at the very popular, but not groundbreaking. People don't really talk about the Jay Leno years that much anymore, even though he was there for more than 20 years and was the number one show for most of them. But he didn't really advance it. He took advantage of what Johnny had established. It was appointment. It was behavioral. It was knee-jerk programming. It was comfortable. It was a habit. And Jay was there. And that's basically, I think, what his tenure was. Jay was there. Yeah, he had a little bump during in 94 when he was kind of exploiting the O.J. Simpson trial, which was kind of in bad taste. Remember the Dancing Itos making fun of the O.J. trial because it itself had become such a cultural icon, even though we were talking about the grisly deaths of two people. But Jay didn't really, I mean, Jay had his Jay walking bit, I get that, but it was funny for a while, and then it became very cliched. Conan was there for a drink of water. You don't even remember what Conan did in that spot. And now Jimmy Fallon, I don't know, he plays, beer pong and password and match game and, terrible interviewer. Not a stand-up, terrible monologues. I don't know what that show is. I don't watch it. I never have, really, with Jimmy Fallon. Not a big fan of Jimmy Fallon. And this is my point. Really, to me, the late-night genre, and I'll be honest, as much as I loved watching David Letterman on late night on NBC from the early 80s, up into the night and into the early 90s, because it was cool and hip and a little dangerous. Larry Bud Melman, Stupid Petrix, Alka-Seltzer suit, dropping things from a tower. Some great bits, some great moments. Andy Kaufman getting flipped by Jerry Lawler, the wrestling match. There were some really cool things that happened on the David Letterman show. But once Johnny was gone, it was a whole new ballgame. The other networks, ABC and CBS, saw that there was now an opening to get some of that late night money, because it was, as I said before, defining for NBC for decades. They owned it, and they were able to use that money and then become a prime time force. Why do you think that NBC was so big in the 70s and especially in the 80s with Cheers and Cosby, and then in the 90s with Seinfeld? Because they had all the money that the Tonight Show was generating to put into development for all these shows. You can't underestimate the impact that the Tonight Show and Johnny Carson had for NBC for more than 30 years. It had tentacles across the whole network. But once Johnny was gone and they basically moved him out, they destroyed themselves, especially the way they handled the replacement, because most people expected and wanted David Letterman, who was already employed at the network right after Johnny, and he was Johnny's choice to be his successor. But because Jay Leno was Johnny's regular fill-in, the network felt he was a safer bet, because the network, the affiliates and the audience were used to seeing Jay fill in for Johnny, and he was more mainstream. He wasn't as edgy. Meanwhile, David Letterman is changing television an hour later, but they went with the safe choice. And I don't blame Letterman for being mad and getting upset. And so what happened? When the other networks saw that Letterman did not get the job, CBS especially, and even Fox, the fourth network, back in the 80s, they tried to dethrone Johnny Carson with one of his regular fill-ins. Joan Rivers was Johnny's fill-in before Jay Leno, regular fill-in. And she became so popular that Fox stole her away, and Johnny never spoke to Joan again after that, even though her talk show was short-lived because the Fox network at the time just did not have the coverage and the popularity. Now Fox is a major network because of basically two things, maybe three things. The Simpsons, Married with Children, and sports. They got the NFL, and that changed the game. Now they've got other sports, but when they got the NFL and they paid a boatload to do it, but it established them. But yeah, a lot of big name entertainers took a run at Johnny. But when he was gone, that became real. And so Les Moonves at CBS said, wait a minute. If NBC doesn't want Letterman, we do. And they basically got into the late night world in a real way, rehabbing the old Ed Sullivan Theater, which they owned, which was obviously the home for one of the more popular Tiffany Network shows of the 60s and 70s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, the Ed Sullivan Show, a variety show on Sunday nights. And that became the home for the David Letterman Show, the Late Show with David Letterman. Used to be late night when he was on, and I guess Seth Meyers still uses that. I don't watch Seth Meyers either. But so here's the thing. The Tonight Show has been around almost since the beginning of television when it became a mass product. So there's a legacy and a history there that goes back, as I said, 70-some years. But CBS is relatively new to the game. David Letterman had a 22-year run, I think, and now Colbert has had about a 10-year run. Now you say, well, that's 32 years. That's not bad. Yeah, I know, but it's not 70. ABC's been it even less than that with Jimmy Kimmel. But there's no question that in the last, I think, since Letterman stopped, and even before that, I would say in the last 20 years, the late night genre, as you know, social media especially, I would once again, you know, you have to point it to that smartphone. It debuted in 2007. I would say by, you know, we had all of a sudden YouTube was growing and these social media things. So I would say that late night really started to lose, and even Letterman, as great as he always was, began to lose some relevance because a new generation did not grow up with that habit of turning on the late night talk show. Now they had something in their hand. So I would say maybe since 2010, the last 15 years, the late night talk show has lost its prominence, its prestige, its ratings, and certainly its revenue. It now competes with all the other things out there, including TikTok, including cat videos, including dancing moms, including whatever is on TikTok today, young girls putting on makeup, Jimmy Kimmel, Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Fallon, who are paid between $15 and $20 million a year, are basically competing with cat videos and people dancing in their living rooms. Instead of the late night talk shows exerting their force and saying, we have the potential to reach all these people through network television, we're going to do something and, you know, flex our muscles and do something. They stooped and decided to compete with all this amateur social media stuff because it was cool. No, you're cool. You've been around. You've got the muscle. So what does Jimmy Fallon and Stephen Colbert and all the rest of them do? They basically, the last 10 years, certainly, as social media has completely exploded, but over the last 10 or 15 years, what have the late night talk shows done? They're on for an hour, probably 47 minutes without the commercials. Basically, those shows exist to create 3 minutes of compelling content out of the 47 that they have, their real job is to create 3 or 4 minutes of compelling content that they can put on their website as a clip, put on Instagram as a clip, or it goes off on social media that people say, hey, did you see this? And they compete with TikTok. How sad is that? And you wonder why our standards of entertainment have dropped to an all-time low. Professional entertainers are willingly competing with teenagers in their bedrooms to create content. Meanwhile, they have $20 million salaries, $100 million studios. They have access to millions of people around the world, and they're doing stupid, subpar entertaining things to compete with TikTok people. And so that's why late night is irrelevant. The competition defined them. They never exerted their muscle and their history and their talent to blow the other people away. They got so afraid of because, and hey, look, you know, as I said many times, we're a society that goes after the new shiny object. So yeah, as social media exploded and the power of that smartphone gave people this instant access in their hip pocket wherever they were, there's no question there's going to be an initial explosion in that. But what happened was network television especially allowed that explosion to take hold and become habit-forming. They never exerted their power. Instead, they went and played in the upstarts ball game, in the upstarts ballpark. And that's why late-night television became irrelevant. When you got Jimmy Fallon competing against cat videos, it's ridiculous. From a quality standpoint and from a watching standpoint, why do I need to see Jimmy Fallon? He's not doing anything. I mean, tell me something that Jimmy Fallon has done that's memorable as a regular bit. That's like a stupid pet tricks that David Letterman had. Tell me. The only one who really had, the irony is, in the last 15 years, the only late night talk show host that really had a phenomenal bit that was creative, it was inventive, it was perfectly executed, was James Corden with his karaoke, where he had huge recording stars get in a car with him and they sang each other, they sang their songs, like Paul McCartney and Elton John and Mariah Carey and all the rest. That was a phenomenally creative bit. That's what late night television should have been. It had the clout to get those celebrities. It had the inventiveness, and it had the platform. But I can't think of one regular standing bit that Stephen Colbert's done in 10 years. I can't think of one standing bit that Jimmy Kimmel's had that rivals that, or Stupid Pet Tricks, or some of the other things I talked about with David Letterman. All Jimmy Kimmel does is cry and have this completely fabricated, completely fake, completely lame, stupid, I hate Matt Damon feud, which was completely contrived. It doesn't work on any level. It's just silly and stupid. And that's his claim to fame. Stephen Colbert, I can't think of one thing that he has, except he turned a late night talk show into a political talk show, into a Donald Trump bashing talk show. That's basically what the Stephen Colbert late night show turned into. Oh yeah, he has, I mean, the show will still be on till May of 2026. He has celebrities on. He does the regular thing. But basically, people don't, you know, once again, we have such a short attention span. People don't realize that when Stephen Colbert took over in 2015, his ratings, initially he got high ratings because he was a new kid on the block. But quickly he went down to number three because there was nothing there. What saved Stephen Colbert's job was Donald Trump. When Donald Trump became a candidate and then when he became president. When he started to attack Donald Trump and coalesced that the Trump hater world and the Democratic liberal people that have all hated Trump, he became the number one show. That was it. Now that's fine, but that's not what a late night talk show in its tradition was about. The late night talk show was supposed to be an escapism from the daily clatter. Was supposed to be something that you went to end your day. But Stephen Colbert made it a politically charged show, mercilessly attacking Donald Trump on a nightly basis. It was a political show. It was Meet the Press with a house band. And certainly during the first term, that gained traction. Just asked Saturday Night Live and Alec Baldwin when he used to come on every week and do a Donald Trump impersonation. Look, in radio, whether you like his politics or not, I'm not going to comment one way or the other. But you cannot deny the audience and the power and the success that Rush Limbaugh had. But when? In the 90s. When Bill Clinton was president for 8 years. That was Rush Limbaugh's greatest moment. Why? Because he was a conservative talk show and there was a Democratic liberal in the White House. And on a daily basis, he attacked him. And that's when that's where his audience went to listen. Just like the liberal Democrats went to Stephen Colbert to hear him and revel in the bashing of Trump in the 90s, the conservative people who didn't like Clinton and the Democrats swarmed to Rush Limbaugh. It's always easier to criticize than to defend. Do you remember anything that Stephen Colbert said during the 4 years of Joe Biden? No. Why? Because he had to defend Joe Biden, and it was pretty hard to defend Joe Biden. But during Trump's first term, you had a lot of people that were shocked and angered that he became president, and Stephen Colbert became their mouthpiece. And that's what saved his job, based on him being a host, based on him being his comic perspective. Without Trump, I remember reading stories, he was this close to being fired. The experiment didn't work. But then he shifted gears, attacked Trump, and saved his job. And of course, then that Trump bashing, when you saw it on Colbert and you saw it on Saturday Night Live, then that's where Kimmel did. Where's the audience? Okay. Jimmy Fallon tried that. But Jimmy Fallon has no political understanding. Jimmy Fallon is a puppy dog looking for attention. He will run in any direction. He will do whatever it takes. He will jump. He will scream. He will shake his head, whatever it is, to keep your attention. He's always tugging at your thing. He doesn't really have any base, or he doesn't really have any core or center. He's just there to smile and laugh and try to keep you entertained. But Kimmel certainly went all in against Trump because he saw what it did for Colbert and for Saturday Night Live. And during that first term, that's when all their ratings shot up. But then when Biden came in, just like Rush Limbaugh had an incredible run during the Clinton administration. Ratings out the wall, making tens of millions of dollars, dominating radio. No questions. I said before, you can dislike his politics. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about his success. He made his bones. He made his success. He made his fortune attacking Bill Clinton. Pure and simple. What happened? Why did he dip? He dipped for 8 years because he had to defend George Bush. Now a conservative came in, and it was really hard to defend George Bush, especially with the whole Iraq situation. When did Rush Limbaugh get a little more juice again? When Barack Obama came back in, a liberal Democrat. Boom. Rush Limbaugh goes up again in popularity and in influence. He had an enemy. It's much easier to criticize than to defend. What happened now in these days is that Donald Trump made this unexpected comeback. After he lost to Biden, most people expected that he was gone forever. And even though Kimmel and Colbert and even Saturday Night Live have tried to continue that attack, it doesn't have the same bite because they attacked him and attacked him and attacked him and he beat them. And so the criticism didn't land anymore. And so you had the Tonight Show. I mean, you had, well, the Tonight Show has always been limping. It's in third place. As I said before, Jimmy Fallon just plays Match Game and Password and, beer pong. I don't know what that show is. But I tell you what it is. It's the Tonight Show. It's a legacy. But CBS and ABC have not been in the late night game for 80 years. And so it's easier for them to pull out. The fact of the matter is, not only have the ratings gone down hugely for late night television, but what was once a revenue-generating machine in late night, as to why the networks all wanted to get in, has dwindled. The Colbert Show, the Late Show, has been losing about $40 million a year. That's a lot of money, especially when you're paying a guy $20. The total revenue of the show in the last 5 years has gone down from more than $400 million to like $200 million, in half. There's a lot of talk here now about, this was politically motivated. Whether you know the behind-the-scenes inside baseball story, CBS is trying to sell itself. Paramount is selling CBS and its entire network to another company that's owned by one of the richest men in the world's son, Larry Ellison's son, in some, multi-billion dollar deal. And because those deals, those mergers, need FCC approval, the Federal Communications approval, and Donald Trump controls that, many people have felt that the management at Paramount, who owns CBS, has been capitulating to Donald Trump because they've been huge critics of his over the last 10 years, and now they will need his approval for this. And so, Donald Trump sued CBS for the editing of a Kamala Harris interview on 60 Minutes. To make her answers sound more coherent than they really were, to make her look like a better candidate. That got revealed that they made a change in the edit while CBS said that they admitted no wrongdoing. They paid Donald Trump $16 million in a settlement. Why? To maybe curry some favor for this big multi-billion dollar deal that they want to get passed. Who's been one of Donald Trump's biggest critics in the last 10 years. Stephen Colbert. A lot of politicians, a lot of entertainers. Jimmy Kimmel and Jon Stewart, who was Stephen Colbert's former boss on the Daily Show, have been screaming, oh, this is unfair. Why? Because they've been huge critics of Donald Trump. And if Paramount gets sold, they own Comedy Central, so Jon Stewart might be in trouble. And Jimmy Kimmel's already in trouble. His ratings are nothing to be brag about. And his contract is up next year. They're looking for survival. It was fashionable and cool and hip and popular to attack Trump during his first term. But when he came back with a whole new agenda and a whole new power base. But here's the thing. You can argue that politics influenced it, and maybe it did to some extent, but you know what influenced Steve Colbert's firing? His own failure. The show wasn't pulling its weight. It was losing $40 million a year. CBS is a public company. If you had somebody on your balance sheet that was losing $40 million a year, would you keep it on? For what, prestige? The fact of the matter is, late night television has been horrible since David Letterman left 10 years ago. And it was losing its impact even when he was around the last several years. But since he's left, it's become a vast wasteland. No one cares about it. No one talks about it. No one watches it. All it is, as I said, 45 minutes looking for 3 minutes. It's become just a place for movie stars to come and plug their new movies, or TV stars to come and plug their new TV show, or rock stars or music stars to plug their new record. What was so great about The Tonight Show, as I said, the concept about it was this place to kind of decompress from the day, to escape all the noise and the stress of the day. And sort of be a cool place to hang out just before you went to sleep. And that's what late night forgot about. It should be a cool hang. It shouldn't be adding to the white noise and the clutter and the divisiveness. But that's what it did. Johnny Carson was so low key. It was a cool hang. The Tonight Show, yes, there's no doubt it had their stars on to promote new movies, but a lot of times entertainers would just be on with nothing to plug. They just came on to talk and hang out with Johnny and tell funny behind-the-scenes stories of how they went to this party or they went on this vacation or they did this. It was a hang. It was a late-night hang. It was a cool place to go. It was a place to escape the stresses and the clutter of the day, to forget about it and hang out with some entertainers for an hour or so and go to sleep. But late night in the last 15 years went the completely opposite. They added to the divisiveness. They added to the clutter. They added to the noise. And they were now competing with a whole world of clutter and noise. They had a niche. They gave it up. They played into the upstarts ballpark instead of flexing their own muscles. Stephen Colbert was not fired. There was no collusion. Donald Trump didn't make a phone call to CBS and say, fire him. It made it easier for him, I guess. But the fact of the matter is, the Stephen Colbert show was not performing. The late night genre as a whole is an anachronism. It is of another time. And I actually give CBS credit for having the guts to say, you know what? It's time to put an end to this. This doesn't have the impact that it used to. It's not appointment television. It's not habit television. It's not unique. It's adding to the clutter. It's adding to the noise. It's adding to the divisiveness. It's not doing anything special. As I said, name me a segment. Name me a regular bit on the Colbert Show that you tune in for to watch. There's no karaoke. There's no stupid pet tricks. There's no Larry Bud Melman. What? There was 8-10 minutes of Trump bashing, and then two horrible interviews with a couple of movie stars, and that was it. And then a song by some band that nobody's heard of, and that was the show. The late night shows were not supposed to add; they were supposed to be an escape. They were supposed to be an alternative, a cool place to hang away from all the outside BS. But late night talk shows added to all that. And that's why they're irrelevant, because now the audience, the younger audience, didn't grow up watching them. They didn't have a habit. So they're looking at people on TikTok and looking that they have just as much, if not more, interest in content and talent than these $20 million supposed entertainers. CBS had a lot of guts. There was a failing show in a failing entertainment genre that has been failing for more than 10 years. And they finally said, you know, once again, once Letterman left, there was no reason for it. There was no reason for it. Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, and Jimmy Fallon are pale, pale, pale imitations of David Letterman, and even more pale than Johnny Carson. Jimmy Kimmel is idolizes David Letterman, but Jimmy Kimmel will never be David Letterman, not even close, because Jimmy Kimmel needs to be liked. He thinks he has an edge. David Letterman didn't care. David Letterman had a real edge, still has it. And that's what made him appealing. Jimmy Kimmel wants that edge. He pretends to have it. He makes up fake feuds with Matt Damon, but we could see right through it. He has no edge. He needs to be liked. Why do you think he's hosting every show? Because he doesn't rattle anybody's cages. He doesn't offend anybody. The people that you see, like Ryan Seacrest and Jimmy Kimmel hosting all these shows, why? Because they're cookie cutter. They're white bread. They don't offend anybody. They have no edge. They're wallpaper. They're background noise. They don't offend anybody. They look nice, and they go about their business. David Letterman rattled cages. Jimmy Kimmel tries to rattle a cage, but you could see right through it. As I said, Jimmy Fallon, as I said, he should never even be close to hosting a late night talk show in its format. He might be good for a variety show in some format, but The Tonight Show, he's so wrong for it. But it doesn't matter. He's been there long enough, so that's his seat. The Tonight Show will be the last one to finally go because of its legacy, and that's it. It's third in the ratings. But NBC loves Jimmy Fallon for whatever reason. You know, he's on all these game shows, past where he makes up all these shows. He's always over the place. He's the face of the network, which is kind of scary. But Jimmy Kimmel, I would say, is in the hot seat right now. ABC was the last one to get into late night programming. They have no real legacy to worry about. CBS had something of a legacy, 32 years. David Letterman with a 22 successful run. But the Colbert years was all Trump driven. That's all it was. And overall, the late night talk show genre is outdated. It's a horse and buggy in a self-driving car world. That's what late night talk shows are right now. They are horse and buggies, not even in a car dominated world. They are so far out of touch and so antiquated. Late night talk shows are horses and buggies in self-driving car worlds. That's how far removed it is. CBS was right to cancel this. The whole late, they're going to put on probably, I'm sure they're going to put on some game shows or show reruns of Blue Bloods, and they're going to get the same amount of eyes and the same amount of revenue from some bad game shows or some reruns of NCIS or whatever all those shows are, and Blue Bloods, the same. They won't have to pay somebody $20 million a year, as well as the expense of that whole late night show with the band and everything else. They'll get the same payback. The late night genre is over. Sadly, it destroyed itself. It could have been a viable and still important thing if it had stuck to its real core value and its core attraction, which is to be escapism from the outside world. Johnny Carson was on for 30 years. You never knew what his politics were. He made fun of Republicans, Democrats, and everyone in between. There was no question what side Stephen Colbert is on. There's no question what side Jon Stewart is on. There's no question what side Jimmy Kimmel's on. I don't know what Jimmy Fallon's doing. But my point is, that's why The Tonight Show was so popular. It was an escape from all that. Yeah, there was political humor, and there was satirical things going on, but he hit both sides. They weren't biased. They weren't propaganda. Late night talk shows got into politics. As I said, they became Meet the Press with bands. We don't need that. We've got enough of that on CNN and MSNBC and Fox and on Sunday mornings. We don't need it every night. You're supposed to provide me some escapism, some removal from that. But they didn't. They added to it because they didn't know what to do, because they didn't have what it took to compete. So that's why Jimmy Fallon's competing with cat videos playing beer pong. They're desperate. They don't have the gravitas. They don't have the ability to grab that mass audience that Johnny Carson had, that David Letterman had, that even a Jay Leno had. But at the same time, too, the viewing habits of the audience have changed. Nobody's watching. Nobody's going there at 10:30 or 11:30 if you're on the East Coast. Nobody's doing it anymore. It was a good idea for its time, but the idea is done. It's run its course, and CBS put the first stake in late night, and it's going to be much easier to do that. I have no way to prove this to you. You just have to take my word for it. The day that the announcement came that Stephen Colbert got fired, I was looking around the internet and I saw this story that said the future of Dave, because they're so critical of Trump, that, and who knows, with a new owner, the Colbert and Jon Stewart shows, who knows if they're in trouble with a new owner. You know, once a new owner comes in, everything's up for discussion. One boss thought was a good idea, the other boss doesn't like it at all. And I was thinking to myself that day when I saw just the headline, I didn't even read the story, I just saw the headline. I said to myself, you know, as I've had this feeling about late night for years, for the last 10 years at least, and I'm like, all it would take is CBS or ABC to cancel either Colbert or Kimmel. And once one of those happens, if one of those companies has the guts to put a stake into the late night genre, which has been such a dominant part of television viewing since its inception, but if they have, in a changing world, if they have the guts, one of those two, because The Tonight Show has this legacy, they'll be the last ones to change. They will change, but it won't come until the other two do it. because of this history, and people will say, oh my God, the Tonight Show is canceled. And then you'll see this, the clips of Steve Allen and Jack Parr and Johnny Carson. And, oh my God, this has been a staple of television. So they don't want to deal with all that peripheral. But as I said, CBS and ABC, they're newer to the game. They don't have that kind of legacy. Yes, David Letterman had a great run, but it was relatively new. And I was saying to myself that day, during the day, if CBS or ABC has the guts to cancel one of those, the dominoes will fall quickly. And late night talk shows will go away because there's really no need for them anymore. They haven't proven their worth. They haven't proven that they're unique enough or they're important enough amidst the landscape now of entertainment. They had their chance. They didn't flex their muscles. Instead, they capitulated to the upstart. And they can't compete with the upstart because the upstart has a new audience that doesn't even understand why they're around. And so during that day, I was saying to myself, you know, if CBS or ABC just had the guts to cancel one of those shows, it would be the end of, it would be the beginning of the end of late night, and it would be much easier for the next guy to do it, and the next guy. As I said, I believe that Tonight Show, if it goes away, will be the last to go because it has the longer history and all this other peripheral stuff around it. And by the end of the afternoon, this news came out about Colbert, and I couldn't believe it. I said, oh my gosh, I was just thinking this. I didn't know which one it would be, Jimmy Kimmel or Stephen Colbert, but oh my gosh. This had nothing to do with politics, in my view. I don't care. I'm telling you, you can't deny why Colbert's ratings went up when he became a Trump basher. But I didn't care. I watched Colbert's interviews. There were nothing special. His band was nothing special. He didn't have any reoccurring bits. There was nothing there to keep me there. He's around my age. I should be connecting with him. No connection at all. He was just filling a seat. And then, you know, doing his usual ranting about Trump for 15 minutes at the beginning of the show. Jimmy Kimmel the same way. I've never thought he was funny. I never watched The Man Show. I never watched him when he used to do football picks on Fox pregame football for some reason. But he's always been harmless. And so people in television, they go for the, especially television, go for the least resistance. Jimmy Kimmel doesn't offend anybody. He pretends he's got this edge and he says some, you know, semi edgy things, but they don't really have any cutting edge to them. You could see they're just fake kind of cutting edge things. There's nothing real behind them. So I'll tell you, there's a lot of uproar. Of course, today, everything that happens is put into the prism of politics. So now Stephen Colbert has become the cause celeb. He's becoming a martyr. He'll be on between May. I'm sure he's going to keep saying the F word all the time and stuff like this. And when did that? I'm going to talk about that a little more. I think when did saying F now? I mean, my gosh, everybody's saying it on television everywhere. What's going on with that? We'll talk about that later. But so Colbert will have, you know, 6 months to say goodbye, and I'm sure he'll bash Trump and do whatever. And everybody will, you know, mourn the death. But this was a business decision, and it was the right decision. Politics aside, as I said, Steve Colbert should have lost his job 10 years ago. He wasn't cutting it until he became the Rush Limbaugh of television, of late night television, by picking his enemy and attacking him every night. That's what saved his job, pure and simple. Look it up. It's not an opinion. And so I actually give CBS a lot of credit because late night overall, politics aside, politics, nothing to do with it. Just on its face, the show was losing $40 million a year. It was losing yearly ad revenue in half. No ratings, no impact, no culture impact. Nobody talks about the show. No one cares about the show. So why is it on? And somebody at CBS finally said, yeah, that's a real good question. Why is it on? I know it's difficult to get rid of something that has been in the pop culture and the culture for 50 years, this late night talk show genre. But you know what? It doesn't have impact or influence or validity anymore. It was once a good idea, but times have changed, people have changed, society has changed. And just because something was popular at one point doesn't mean it hangs around forever. And that's been proven. And this late night talk show thing has been allowed to extend its life when it's been on life support for many, many years. And finally, CBS pulled the plug. And I guarantee you that you're going to see ABC do the same relatively soon. And I wouldn't be surprised, despite the legacy and the history of The Tonight Show, that goes the same way. If it doesn't, the only thing that's saving it is that history. Does NBC have the guts to get rid of one of the most popular shows and popular genres in television history? That's a big Megillah. That's a big thing to say. The person who makes that decision will have to fend off a lot of criticism, but at the same time, it's a right business decision. They'll have to fight off all the nostalgia. But I think that now that CBS has done that to The Late Show, not just getting rid of Colbert, but the entire show itself. And I have to say this too. If I was David Letterman, I'd be a little upset, to be honest with you. Because in their official comment about why they were canceling The Late Show, they said that Steve, of course, you know, they've got to compliment him, even though they're getting rid of him. That's today's world. Thank you, Steve Colbert, for your contribution, blah, blah, blah. Because no one can replace Stephen Colbert, we are not just getting rid of him. We are shutting down the entire late night talk show franchise on CBS. They're making it sound that Stephen Colbert was irreplaceable. So we have, if we're going to get rid of him, we got to get rid of the whole thing. So David Letterman was replaceable. Stephen Colbert was able to replace David Letterman. When they pushed David Letterman out, they didn't get rid of The Late Show in general. They didn't put their Blue Bloods reruns on at 10:30. They replaced him with Stephen Colbert. But Stephen Colbert is irreplaceable. Wow. We're shutting down the whole shooting match because no one can replace Steve Colbert. Wow. If I was David Letterman, I'd be a little upset. So what's going to happen at CBS? Not much. You're not watching it now anyway. So few people are. They're going to have some version of some late night talk show. In fact, here's my prediction. Here's what I think's going to happen. I think there's going to be a late night version of The Price is Right. Drew Carey is going to wind up being on at 10:30. The Price is Right is a CBS goldmine. They have it late night. They have it on at night every so often during the summer and the fall, as well as every day. I would not be, and a lot of people can't watch it every day during the day. Here's my prediction. You heard it here first. A late night version of Price is Right. Whether it's with Drew Carey or not, I don't know. But it's going to be a game show. And I would not be surprised if CBS puts its biggest revenue maker, which is The Price is Right, on at 10:30 now in the place of that. You heard it here first. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 479. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. To the end of my mind, to your ears.
Come on down!